Hey everybody, welcome back into Mining Stock Daily as we kick off our week. What a eventful few days it has been. I will say, our guest here, Craig Hemke from TF Metals Report, him and I are recording this Friday morning, coming off of a Thursday night. I don't even know how you explain what happened on the other side of the world yesterday. Reports that if you were sleeping on the East Coast, there's a good chance you were falling asleep, and most of Europe was asleep. That Israel had had stricken Iran, an air base in the central of the country. Just based on that, the response was a 65-point drop in S&P futures, $35 rally in gold, 10-year yield fell substantially, and oil jumped $4. And by the time I woke up Friday morning, Craig, it was world peace again, like nothing had happened, whipsawed. But I think if you look at this action, Craig, and I just want to get your thoughts here. If you look at this action of what happened in just a matter of hours, if you need an excuse to show you just how fragile these markets are, I think you saw it in the couple hours Thursday night.
It's an excellent point, Trevor. And nice to see you again.
Good to see you too.
It's always fun to visit. Yeah. You know, let's hope, like you said, we're sitting here Friday morning. Let's hope that this is over with. We've all been dealing with this for almost 3 weeks. I think it was April Fool's Day. It went in Monday, April Fool's, when Israel hit the Iranian consulate or embassy or whatever you want to call it in Damascus. And I knew at the time, it was one thing for the U.S. to wipe out that Soleimani cat on the road to the Baghdad airport, right? It's something entirely different for the Israelis to attack the Iranian embassy in a different country, because embassies are supposed to be your sovereign land, right? So for all intents and purposes, they'd reached into Iran to kill those generals. So it's a totally different deal. And you knew this was hanging out there. You know, the Iranians started getting, you know, kind of bellicose over the last week. And then, you know, we had the thing happened on Saturday, and then it was like, well, what's now Israel going to do? So hopefully now this is done. Nobody's rooting for a region-wide war, that's for sure. But then, who knows what's going to happen between the time we're recording this and the time people are watching this on Monday. If we can at least calm things down, then you're right. It has shown a couple of things, how some markets are kind of hanging by a thread. The stock market has just gone kind of straight up, the S&P, for the last 6 months, but now it has begun to roll over and it's back below its 50-day moving average, and just feels like, you know, all it needs is a good shove from behind to send it tumbling. So we'll see. Hopefully now I'd give anything just to get back to talking about, why is gold going up? Gosh, this is so crazy that I have to be worrying about all this other stuff.
Yeah, well, we do need to talk about that, because it's been a little while since you and I have chatted on this podcast. I've been able to catch a couple of your interviews with other platforms and friends of ours. But let's do talk about this, because it seems there's both a technical reason for the breakout in gold, the violent breakout, I might say, but there's also these fundamental reasons. And I think we just explained some of the fundamental reasons on the geopolitical side, but there's also, you know, sovereign debt reasons, fundamental reasons here. There is, reasons with the amount of treasuries that Miss Yellen is looking to sell. So, you know, how are you kind of watching all this, and kind of, if you can explain to that 30,000 foot view, the fundamentals versus the technicals of what you've seen in gold in the last few months?
Yeah, it is kind of a good combo. I think you're right. We still see almost every day articles on Bloomberg and CNBC, analysts befuddled as to why gold is going higher, you know, and these are people that, either the author is a humanities major from some East Coast university who doesn't know anything about it in the first place, or they're talking to somebody else that's a generalist that hasn't considered gold for decades, if ever. And so they're kind of grasping at straws too. But I was here, I watched it happen. So I think I can explain to everybody. You'll recall, you know, we've discussed this the last couple of years. I write an annual I call it a macro cast every January.
Yeah.
And people do it. They think that people think I write it as like a forecast. And I guess kind of it is, but I'm mainly writing it for myself because I want to be able to go back at the end of the year because I'm going to get stuff wrong. And I want to be reminded of what I was thinking at the time so that then I can learn, right? I can go, okay, well, oh, all right, that's what I got. Like last year, I thought in 2023 that gold would break out of its trading range that it had been in since 2020. And usually when you break out and move to new all-time highs in just about anything, Trevor, you add about 10% in kind of a rush of excitement and speculative interest coming in and headlines and all that. Kind of, hey, look at the trains leaving the station. So I figured, well, we get above 2,100, add 10%, you know, 2,300. Well, it didn't happen last year because, you know, the economy kept chugging along. You know, we had a couple bouts where people thought, you know, the Fed was going to start cutting. They never did. And so that all got postponed. And so as we entered this year, I thought, okay, well, we'll target 2,300 again because this will be the year the Fed starts cutting. And instead, look what gold did. You know, we had, there are now like no rate cuts pending. We've had the yield on the 10-year note move up 50 basis points. We had the dollar index move up 4 or 5%, yet gold's up whatever it is, 15% year to date. And so to kind of trace this back to the fundamental reason why it broke out, back at the very end of February, gold had kind of rallied and it recovered the losses from January. And on February the 28th, it began to move up with the latest PCE report that day. Then on Friday, March the 1st, I call the Fed guys goons. Goon Waller gave a speech in the middle of the morning. Gold was already up about 10 bucks on the day, not, you know, about 2050, 2060. And Goon Waller comes out and says, here's where I think the Fed should go going forward. One, we should do kind of a reverse twist where we dump our longer dated securities and buy the shorter end to create a bid to keep short rates low, which would then uninvert the yield curve and lead to a recession. But then more importantly, he said, by doing so, it'll give us some room on the long end for future asset purchase programs. Wait a second. Hold on. I need a 30-second timeout on that. Did he just say future asset purchase? And boom, gold went up about $30 over the next hour or two. Finished the week at like 2095, 2097. New all-time daily high, new all-time weekly high, and a clear breakout. And the next week, here came everybody, and we were 2,200 by March the 8th. We've drifted along, went to 23. This war stuff shot us through 23 to 24. So that's kind of it's a combination of some fundamental, like you said, but also this technical factor of everybody kind of seeing, I mean, when you go sideways for 3 years, the benefit of that is everybody sees it. Mm-hmm. And so everybody recognizes the breakout too. And all those things have combined to get us to where we are.
Yeah. I do want to ask you a little bit about potential headwinds here in the gold trade. Obviously, gold started moving when the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell started talking about rate cuts. And we spent too much time in the last 3 months talking about that spread between market expectations and the Federal mm-hmm. Reserve expectations at the beginning of the year. That has increasingly narrowed. In fact, I think we're pricing in about one and a half cuts here for the rest of the year. But you're starting the last couple days, we've had a lot of quote unquote Fed speak here, Craig, and yeah, they're starting to back up a little bit from this rate cut discussion and narrative here. I know you can tell that they want to cut rates. It's an election year. It's something they want to do. Like, I'm not a conspiratorial type of person, but I do believe like whatever you can do to keep the orange man out of office is kind of what's mm-hmm. happening in the background. I think this is something they want to do, but they just don't have the data to support it. And you're seeing even keeled heads on shoulders within that area of Washington and New York saying, maybe we need to slow down this because we just, maybe higher for longer is the rate to go. But if it is higher for longer, and if that's a surprise, and Jerome's not able to get his rate cuts, is that a headwind for gold?
Hasn't been yet. That's the thing. That's what's so interesting.
I know you're right. I know it hasn't. So sure.
And that gets to some of that fundamental stuff you're talking about. You know, a lot of analysts are perplexed that over the last 2 years, a long-term correlation between real interest rates and gold has broken. I mean, it's pretty tight correlation. Real interest rates go negative, gold goes higher, and vice versa. And yet you plot them together and this big gap has now widened between the two. And there's a lot of, you know, kind of traditional generalists are going, why isn't gold $1,200? I'll tell you why. It happened 2 years ago. That was also the start of record central bank demand. I mean, what, 2022 was 650 metric tons or whatever the exact number was. It was the highest number since 1968, the year that the demand was so high that the London gold pool broke up. And then it continued on last year at about the same pace. And so I think the banks in charge of, you know, flowing physical metal to the derivative price in London, they realize that if they drop price, you know, if price goes to $1,200, they're not going to be gold left, right? Now the whole scheme does one of these deals. And so as price fell, every time price fell last year, you were quick to see the banks, which are typically always short, you know, through hedging or whatever you want to say they're doing, they'd get long. Price would drop, and all of a sudden, you'd have this huge surge in the long position of the banks, not only in gold, but then in silver, even net long, the banks in silver. And so you kind of had this floor under price that kept it from collapsing that far. So now to get now to the, so that's why gold's been able to keep going, even though rates have risen and real rates, you know, as they're currently measured are positive. For gold now, though, going forward, again, I want to emphasize, you got all these goons that come at you every day, right? Williams and Cash and Carry, and I mean, all of them. And Cash Carry is the worst, man. He was the one. I just saw another meme yesterday. He said they weren't going to, he's not even thinking about hiking rates until after 2023. That was in 2021. So now he comes out yesterday, and of course, we know what happened. And he comes out yesterday and says, there's no way we're cutting rates until 2025. Who cares what this guy says? Right. But he talks and he looks like some pharaoh. So they got to make sure they listen to him. Only listen to Powell, I guess is what I'm getting at.
All sure. These other,
whatever. And Powell, this was part of what helped shove gold even higher in the back half of March. Powell at the March FOMC said plainly that he will postpone the fight against inflation if he senses weakness in the labor market. And an unemployment rate moving up from 4%, because he said the risk is we cut too soon, inflation keeps going, we cut too late, and we have economic issues. And he's guarded against that. So he said that in his press conference. He said it the next weekend in an interview with Bloomberg, that if he sees any weakness in the labor market, they're going to move to cut. So now we haven't seen that yet through the jobs report. But if that starts to happen, cuts will be right back on the table. I mean, he's told you as much, and I'm sure that's still the case.
Yeah. The labor data though is always, I don't know why we haven't learned here, Craig, where it comes out and it's not even real numbers. You got to wait 2 months after for the revisions. Those are the real numbers. But when the real numbers do come out, you know, the market's been shrugging them off.
Right.
Because they're terrible.
Right.
They're
not even remotely. I mean, it's all part-time jobs. And if you dig deeper, it seems to be part-time jobs that are being provided to illegal aliens that have come in. I mean, all of that's in that supposedly sacrosanct data that the BLS puts out. You know, I'll give you another one. Not only are, you know, most people have seen, you know, these numbers come out, the algos react, and a month later, they're revised lower. It's what, 12 out of the last 13 months or whatever. But, you know, I saw the Jim Bianco guy on Twitter yesterday pointed out that over the last like 8 weeks, the weekly jobless claims numbers have been either 210, 211, or 212,000 for eight weeks in a row.
Pretty in line.
And there's 50 different states. I mean, that is beyond hitting the lottery type of statistical improbability. So it appears, I think, for any, you know, I don't know, conspiratorial, objective, whatever person, that the bureaucrats who I think have, you know, we've seen surveys, you know, WashingtonDC.gov employee bureaucrats are like 95% Democrat, that they're cooking the books to keep Orange Man out of office, like you said. Now, this might be, Trevor, this might be giving them too much credit, that 3D chess kind of thing that people talk about. But do you think at some point, if it appears that a rate cut would help the stock market or, you know, help Biden's chances anyway, do you think the people at the BLS would go, okay, now wait a second, Powell's told us that he'll cut rates if they, let's print a 4.2 unemployment report just for fun. And we don't know what it really is, but let's just print it at 4.2 just to see what Powell does. And maybe, I don't know, that's probably a stretch to think that they, yeah, you know, play chess like that. But
I mean, maybe I don't know. I mean, in the game of politics, anything's on the table, right? I mean, that'd be a little egregious, I would say. I don't understand. I mean, I think you could find a better reason for if you really needed a quarter point cut for political reasons, you could find any reason to do it without having to cook the books, right?
Yeah.
So that's just my thought.
At the end of the day, we're kind of coming up with reasons why if gold is kind of rallying because of the, you know, the talk about future QE and the idea that, you know, these rate cuts really still could begin at any time because it's an election year. And then you got all the physical stuff going on. I mean, there's just a number of things that have come together here in the first quarter of the year. And fine with me. I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to obviously got to keep your head on a swivel. In fact, Thursday, and you said only listen to Powell, I know, but I'm going to pivot that. Bostic came out and said if inflation moves higher, he's open to a rate hike.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Goon Williams.
I mean, it's like a terrible Thanksgiving dinner at the next FOMC meeting. So,
Powell is not. I'm thinking of Christmas, but Powell is Clark Griswold. You know,
yes,
one of these deals.
But you know, he deserves his Jelly of the Month Club membership. Right? That's for sure.
We're sitting here on Friday the 19th. You know, people watching this early in the week. There's a lot coming in this next week. The flash PMIs, the first look at the PMIs for April will move things. I think that's Tuesday. Durable goods, first guess at Q1 GDP is, I think, Thursday. And then Friday brings the next PCE report. So this week here ahead is going to be very busy. And then, of course, the following week, we have the next jobs report. So if we can, I'd love to just get back to that stuff. Watching the bond market, the dollar, and everything else, and not have to worry about this war stuff. So fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Let's spend the next minute or two before we wrap here, Craig. I want to talk to you about the gold miners and just your expectations for Q2 numbers. We have, like we said, we've added $300 pure margin on the product price of gold. We're going to find out what those line items look like for input costs on that production. I don't go through those statements with a fine tooth comb by any means, but I'm just more of a casual observer of looking to see have energy prices risen. Yes, but the product price of gold has by far outpaced energy costs. I'm curious about labor costs and, you know, all these inputs, but I'm sitting here. I just can't, you know, on the broad scheme of things, I can't find a reason why that margin isn't just incredibly pure profit for the gold miners. What are your expectations come late July, August for Q2 numbers and the gold numbers? Do you think that could be a pivotal time for Wall Street to finally notice that they've been missing out and maybe get a little FOMO?
Maybe. It's just so difficult. It's like people got mad at me back in February because I finally, after holding 300 shares in Newmont, probably almost all the way down, finally just said, oh, to hell with this, because I pulled up a chart and saw that Newmont at $32 or whatever it was that day was lower than it was 20 years ago.
Right.
It's not like there'd been like five splits. I'm like, well, you know, so you talk about a company that can't control costs, you know, and they've got all these, they tweet about their DEI programs and all the other crap. All of that has nothing to do with just getting gold out of the ground and trying to make a profit at it. And so I think you got to be selective in the ones you own. Obviously, I dumped my Newmont and bought more AEM for people that are wondering, and stocks like Kinross and West Dome and things like that are what I'd prefer to hold. Regarding this next round of earnings that are start kicking in and early part of May for the first quarter. You know, I thought, again, where's the price point where the margins get better? Because I thought as we turned out of December into January, I thought, oh man, this is going to be a great time for the miners. Because when the fourth quarter began, and this is kind of hard to remember, but when the fourth quarter began, gold was like 1820. Mm-hmm. And it finished the fourth quarter at 2070 or something like that. And I thought, wow, I mean, these miners are going to have all these great reports and they're going to, and right? So now here we are, you know, we just wrapped up the first quarter. Gold's up another 10%, right? It should be great. And maybe the price is now high enough that, you know, it just all flows through to the bottom line. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little, I don't know. I'll just conclude by saying I have, just because I know my own deficiencies, I don't know this stuff like you do or Kranzler or Joe Mazumdar or any of these guys that do this for a living. And so I would tell anybody listening, if you want to be in the mining sector, don't just buy yourself an ETF or what, and don't sit there and think you know, don't call your stockbroker and say, I want to get a, and he goes, I don't know, the biggest one's Newmont. Okay, we'll just get you some Newmont and then shut up and go away. Find some objective sources, some people that know what they're doing, like you, that can look at it and go, well, this grade per ton over however many meters and blah, blah, all that stuff that I don't, you know, they can tell you what the good ones are. And then maybe you got a shot. If you're just going to buy Newmont or Barrick or something, like I said, those stocks are the same price they were 20 years ago. So you got to be pretty selective, regardless of what the price of gold's doing.
Yeah. Well, I would say the bigger the company, the more bureaucratic it is, which means the higher the cost is to produce 1 ounce of gold.
Yeah,
I continue to really like the mid tier producers, yeah, are the ones with the lowest cash costs. In their peer group. That's the ones I like. So, Craig, it's good to see you again. Thanks for doing this, man.
Always fun, Trevor. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, we won't make it so long next time as far as, you know, keeping you away from the pod. But, TF Metals Report, tell us where we can find you.
Here's my finger right there. oh, my gosh. I've been doing this now, Trevor, if you can believe it, for like 14 years. And we wandered in the desert for what felt like 40. That's for sure. and now it's finally fun again to some extent. But the best part about my site is the community of subscribers. You really need a community. You know, you may not know your neighbors and all that kind of stuff, but you need people to help you through all of this storm that's going on. I mean, we talked about all these other things, but as you mentioned earlier, the overall end of the Great Keynesian Experiment, as I call it, you know, the exponential terminal phase of the debt that we're in. People just need to be aware. They need to understand it. And that's, I think, a large part of the value of my site. I mean, I do analysis every day and a podcast every day, but just the interaction with people that can help educate you and bring you up to speed and keep you on top of things, I think is well worth the money. So anyway, it's affordable. And again, it's, I think, for just about everybody. And again, it's just tfmetalsreport.com.
All right, Craig, thanks so much. Catch you again.
The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.